8:30. Is everybody ready? I will call our ADA board meeting to order for March 3rd, 2021. And Lisa, would you call the roll of the board members, please?
Julie Sandy?
Here. Yes, I'm here.
Anna McKinnon?
Here.
Bill Kendrick?
Here.
Albert Fogel?
Here.
Julie Anderson?
Here.
Bernie Carl?
Here.
Dana Pruse?
Here.
All members are counted.
Thank you. Item number three is agenda approval. Someone want to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert Fogel. I will motion to approve the agenda as presented.
This is Bill. I second.
For discussion? Does anybody have any additions, deletions, comments? Hearing and seeing none, any objection to adopting the agenda as presented? I don't see any objection, so it is adopted. Thank you. Brings us to item number four, public comments. I'd like to wish everybody a good morning on the line. I don't see anybody in the conference room here. So I would ask that you limit your comments to 2 minutes. And I'd also like to make sure that for our record that you state your name clearly and in affiliation. With that, Lisa, would you go ahead and see if there's anyone to make a public comment.
To make a public comment, raise your hand by pressing *9.
Hi, my name is Marty Deshevsky. I'm a lifelong Alaskan calling from Denny in the Land. Can you hear me?
What was your name? We can hear you. What was your name again?
Margie Deshevsky.
Welcome, Marty. Go ahead.
Thank you. I first provided public comment and attended an ADA board meeting the night before Christmas Eve. After just 48 hours of notice, when ADA's board unanimously approved the resolution to bid on Arctic National Wildlife Refuge oil leases, despite broad public opposition, over 300 email comments and 39 testifiers that evening. It was clear that ADA's public meeting was simply a procedural step and the board's decision had already been made. And I still haven't received answers to this question, but I am 13th when I provided public comment a second time. Now, here I am again, asking questions I've heard others ask and also have read in prior meeting minutes. Why is ADA providing such little public notice and hiding in executive sessions? I can't help but infer that you're afraid of what we have to say and don't want the Alaskan public to know what you're actually doing. Robust public input is precisely what's needed for us to work together in the long interest of all Alaskans and to achieve ADA's mission to promote economic growth and diversification. I was happy to see that you have an Open Meetings Act training on the agenda for this meeting because I watched the live stream of Mr. Weitzner's presentation to the Senate Finance Committee this Monday and was dissatisfied with your response to Senator Wykowski's questions about public input. You are clearly not meeting reasonable public notice standards. And even more troubling is your extensive use of executive sessions in which you pick and choose which deliberations are public and make big decisions that impact Alaskans behind closed doors. Executive sessions should be used infrequently. The matter to be discussed must be specifically described in public and no action may be taken in executive session. According to your meeting minutes for February 10th, 2021, ADA was in executive session for 8 entire hours out of an 8.5-hour meeting. And more recently at your, a little further back at your December 9th meeting, Mr. Kastner was testifying about some other totals. For example, September 16th, you had a total of 6 hours and 28 minutes in executive session. On October 28th, you had 4 hours and 45 minutes in executive session. And so I underscore his statements that ADA handles public money, has public authorization, needs to meet the Open Meetings Act, and I appreciate the opportunity to bring these stats to your attention at this time.
Thank you for your comments. Lisa, is there anybody else?
To make a comment, please press *9.
All right, Lisa says that there's no one else to make a public comment, so I will close the public comment section on our agenda. That brings us to item number five, prior minutes for February 10th, 2021. Everybody had a chance to look at them over, and I'll entertain a motion.
I move we approve prior minutes of February 10th, 2021.
Board members, may I be a second?
Discussion? Has everybody had a chance to go over the minutes? Any corrections, deletions, additions, clarifications? Hearing and seeing none, is there any objection to adopting the minutes for February 10th? Hearing and seeing no objections, they are adopted. Brings us to item number 6, new business, which is the training session on Open Meetings Act presentation. Alan?
Mr. Chairman, we have and should be joined by Stuart Gehring, who will be giving us a training session on the Open Meetings Act. There's a presentation that has been provided to the board and also provided and linked to our agenda, so it's available as well to the public, which is reviewing the information that he's going to be sharing today with us. Alyssa, is Stuart joining us?
He has been notified to join us, correct.
Is Curtis coming down?
Curtis will be coming down. But I'm not saying actually that Stuart Gehring is on the teams on the invite for us. So possibly someone within Department of Law that's joined us can get in touch with their colleague.
I just sent him an email. This is Stefan. I've just sent him an email. I think he's joining. He'll be joining momentarily.
And we got this at 30, max 30 minutes, right? 30 minutes presentation max. We can postpone this to the next meeting if we have to.
I just received an email from Stuart. He's logging on now.
Thank you, Stefan. Mr. Gary, thank you for joining us. What we have scheduled for you is a 30-minute presentation on the Open Meetings Act to ADA's board.
Okay, I will do my best to get it into the material into that amount of time. I'm going to share my screen. I think you all have it in your packet, but it would be easier probably if we... See if that's the correct one. Here we go. Okay, so just to be clear, this is the AEA and ADA board. To make sure I'm in the correct place, this is Wednesday, so I think that's where I'm supposed to be. We are going to cover the Open Meetings Act, which is found at AS 4462-310 through 319. And not to give away the punchline, but the point of the Open Meetings Act is that government business is presumed to be public business. There are a few exceptions, which we will talk about. There are also some non-exceptions, but opportunities to do some subject matter in executive session, and then we'll talk a little bit about the consequences of violations that may flow from the Open Meetings Act. So to start out with, this is a pretty dense slide. This is actually a verbatim reproduction of AS 4462-312A. And I provide it primarily because I want you to have it available for reference without having to go look it up. And that's a reminder that I have a meeting at 9 o'clock. The thing that's really remarkable about this particular statute is the Open Meetings Act itself dates statehood. This particular provision was added in 1972, and it is, I won't say absolutely unique among state law, but it is relatively unusual in that the legislature has told us in the executive branch how to interpret an existing law. And essentially, this particular statute says that there are a bunch of principles that we want to keep in mind, even though the statute may not be absolutely limiting us, that when we have a way of interpreting 4462.310, that we need to keep in mind what the legislature had in mind, what the policy ideas behind that were. And that's so that the executive branch, and if necessary, the courts, have some idea of what the legislature is trying to get at with the Open Meetings Act. And there are some kind of I guess when you think about them, obvious statements in here, but ones which are a little bit jarring when you see them in the context of the operations of day-to-day state government. And so a couple of them that are really, at least to me, whenever I read them, kind of jump out are, the people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies that serve them, and the people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. So, you know, these are pretty bold statements, I really would suggest that if you ever have a question about how to apply the Open Meetings Act, and you're leaning one way or the other and you're not sure which way to go, this is a place to go and read again to see sort of which direction the legislature would want you to lean in interpreting the law.
Stuart, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
This is Dana, I'm the chair. Is there any differential, is it applied AS 4462-312 between a government agency and a government-owned C corporation?
So,
I just want to make sure that, I mean, it applies to all, or if you get into your presentation, if there's any differences, we would appreciate knowing.
So I think that the question is not so much, if it is a government entity within the meaning, then we're going to talk about what that means, but the Open Meetings Act applies to all governmental entities, and that includes public corporations of the state. So it certainly applies to AEA and ADA as public corporations or public entities of the state. How that flows down, and I guess I should have said up front, this is what I'm doing this morning is conducting training. You have assigned attorneys, and if you have specific questions that apply to your actual decision-making relative to the Open Meetings Act, I'm not going to give you advice on that today. I would recommend that you consult with your attorneys to get advice on things that deal with you specifically. This, what I'm doing is going to be directed towards the generic presentation of the law rather than the law as it applies specifically to you. But the general,
if the government, I just want to make sure the umbrella covered everything. That's all. I'm just.
It's pretty broad. It covers anything which is a governmental entity, and let's we'll make sure we give that some attention when we get to that point. In any event, keep this handy. I'm not suggesting that you have it laminated and keep it in your top desk drawer to consult every morning before you start work, but it's a good idea to have available when you're making decisions about what to do with Open Meetings Act decisions. So the presumption in the statute is that meetings of a governmental body of a public entity are open to the public. And then there have to be specific exceptions that apply in order to have closed sessions, or occasionally other laws will allow closed sessions, even though it may not be explicitly in the Open Meetings Act. The other thing about it is that the materials that you consider at your meetings should also be available to the public. This is a generic requirement, and because it's very difficult for the public to understand what's going on at a public meeting in terms of discussion and that sort of thing if the board members are looking at materials that the public can't see. And, you know, it's very annoying to sit in a meeting and have someone say, now on page 3 you said, you know, something paraphrased, and then, you know, could you address that further? If you don't know what page 3 says, it's really hard to understand the rest of that conversation. Now, as it turns out, ADA has a statute that actually expands on the Open Meetings Act requirement. That would be AS 44880503, which addresses making materials available to the public. So it's sort of a double requirement in the case of ADA that you do this, but that would be a general requirement for any governmental body of a public entity to make those materials available. And so what is a meeting? That's defined in AS 4462.310(g)(2). Both ADA and AEA's boards meet the definition of a governmental body, which the definition is actually in AS 4462.310(h)(1). And on top of that, your specific organic statutes, the ones that actually create ADA and AEA, specifically indicate that the Open Meetings Act applies to those two entities. In the case of ADA, that's AS 4488085. In AS 4488190A, for AEA, that's AS 4483970. And I'll note that the definition of the members of a governmental body include committees of the governmental body as well. So you can have a meeting even though the whole board may not be meeting or scheduled to meet. Now, there's two different things here on the screen. The top one is the more likely one for you because it's going to be a matter of you have actual power to act. B is primarily for advisory boards. Some boards have only advisory functions and can only make recommendations to other bodies. They still have to comply with the Open Meetings Act, but the definition varies slightly of what a meeting is. Basically, if there's more than three members of a decision-making body on an elevator together, that's a meeting. It doesn't matter whether they were scheduled to be there or whether if they talk about the policies or decisions of the public entity on the elevator, that's a meeting. That wouldn't be true for an advisory board because they wouldn't have gathered in the elevator specifically for that purpose unless, of course, very weirdly, someone decided that's where they wanted to meet. But that's the only real distinction between advisory boards and decision-making boards. So just to recap, if it's more than three members or a majority of the board, whichever is less, then it's that is the sort of threshold question. As I said, it applies to committees. If policies are decisions are considered, it doesn't matter whether the meeting was prearranged for that purpose or not. It's a meeting within the definition of the Open Meetings Act, which when we start talking about consequences of violations, it's important to know if you had a meeting or not. And then if you're only doing recommendations, then it has to have been prearranged. So in your case, for example, if you get an inquiry from a legislative committee asking for your view on legislation, you don't have the ability to actually pass that legislation. The best you can do is give recommendations or advice. Then you might possibly be able to discuss that if it wasn't prearranged outside of a publicly noticed meeting. I wouldn't recommend it, but it is a distinction there for boards that only have the ability to recommend or advise. So, let's see. Not sure why that's doing that. Okay. So, in order to have a meeting, you have to give public notice. This is the statute in total. Your organic statutes indicate that you can use electronic media, provided that participants and members of the public in attendance can hear and have the same right to participate in the meeting as if the meeting were conducted in person. That's in addition to the ability that people get from the Open Meetings Act. In the case of ADA, that's found in AS 4488050A. And in the case of AEA, that's found in 4483040B2. So basically, what we're doing in the time of COVID is something that, at least as to AEA and ADA, the legislature somewhat anticipated needing to do. Other boards have to sort of make it up. You actually have explicit direction on what a virtual meeting looks like. So since the statute uses the term reasonable public notice, the question is, under the Open Meetings Act, what's considered reasonable public notice? As an absolute minimum, it has to contain the date, time, and place of the meeting, including any teleconferencing information. It has to be posted on that's the Alaska Online Public Notice System. It has to be published at the agency's office and then optionally in print and broadcast media. Unfortunately, the Open Meetings Act has not been amended since the advent of social media, but certainly any method that you can use to get information out to the public to make them aware of the fact that you're having meetings is acceptable. And so if you want to use social media to announce your meetings, you can. I wouldn't recommend doing that exclusively. You certainly need to always use the online notice system and the actual posting at your offices. There are agencies that still use physical mailing lists. I don't know whether you do or not, but there's no requirement to send out physical mailings. You can use email if you want. The primary objective of all of this is to make sure that as many people that might be interested in your business are aware of the fact that you're having meetings. Most agencies are not explicitly required to have an agenda in advance, although some agencies do that by regulation and most do it by practice. In the case of AEA, AS 4483970 requires that you publish an agenda and take public comment, which are unusual among state agencies. That requirement is not typical. The other thing that is reasonable in public notice that's not explicitly in the Open Meetings Act is that the notice should include Americans with Disabilities Act information in terms of how people who need accommodation to attend the meeting can be accommodated. And typically there would be an ADA coordinator that would handle those kinds of requests, but that needs to be in the public notice so that members of the public who are unable to participate fully because of a disability will have the opportunity to participate with accommodations. So the Open Meetings Act is somewhat flexible about not just the content of the notice, but also the timing of the notice. There is no absolute minimum requirement for that in the Open Meetings Act. One of the most important things is that you be consistent in the timing and the manner of public meeting notice. Agencies are, people follow you, they're interested in what you do. Some people do that silently, and they come to sort of expect a certain rhythm in terms of, okay, you're going to notice a meeting X time ahead of time. And once people get used to that, if that gets changed for some reason, if you deviate from your usual practice, it might cause people to not see the notice. And so you want to be as consistent as possible. The Department of Law, in general, advises that you should give at least a week. Sometimes that's not possible. The business that you have to do may be more time sensitive than that. And so you can give shorter notice than that. One of the, I listed some examples of reasons why you might need to have a public meeting on shorter notice than a week. One of the things that you might want to think about is if you do have to do a shortened notice period compared to normal, is to use additional means of providing notice. So perhaps you might want to use additional media that you wouldn't normally use. You may want to make sure that it's posted online on the agency's website. You may want to email people, and point out the fact that it's on shorter notice than usual, rather than just have it be the sort of normal stock of notice. You may also, if you don't normally do it, you may also want to prepare a verbatim transcript in the event that people find out about it after the fact. They will be able to actually see the actual conversations that happen, not just minutes from those. I don't know if you do a verbatim transcript on a normal basis, but for times that you've done a meeting that people might reasonably not have been able to attend because of the short notice period. That's a way to do it. Another way is to make recordings available. Audio and or video recordings can help mitigate that. And then, of course, if you haven't, for some reason, published your agenda in advance because of the urgency of the matter, you may want to think about making sure you get your agenda up in a little bit more detail after the fact. So there are a few exceptions to the Open Meetings Act. In other words, these are times when you aren't having a meeting, even though it sort of looks like a meeting because you've got a bunch of people in the same room and you're talking about stuff that's interesting to the agency, or even, you have specific items that you're going to talk about relative to the agency. Nevertheless, these are not considered subject to the Open Meetings Act. The biggest one in state agencies is any judicial or quasi-judicial board does not have to comply with the Open Meetings Act in order to deliberate. They still have to have hearings that are open to the public if they're conducting hearings, but they can actually meet and adjudicate. So that would be professional licensing boards, for example, and that sort of thing. They don't have to give notice or schedule those or have executive sessions to do that. That does not apply to ADA or ADA, as far as I know. But in case you're wondering why there are some agencies that never seem to have their do much business in public, that can be a reason why. Staff meetings are another exception. The statute isn't real explicit about what a staff meeting is. But if your entire agency staff is there and your board members are invited to participate, and the best example of that would be like farewell party for a longtime employee who's retiring, or a birthday celebration on a monthly basis, or you know, just a thing to, for people to get together to talk about, you know, sort of administrative details that apply to employees of the agency, your staff, and that sort of thing. That those would be the typical kinds of things that are staff meeting. There are some chances where perhaps training for staff that might be available also to the board would be considered a staff meeting for this purpose and could be conducted without without providing notice. The important thing, though, is if there's anything that's, if board members in the course of doing that start talking about stuff that's actually decisional, at that point it does become a meeting. But if the board members are there as if, you know, in the same role as any, as anybody else in the staff, then that's not subject to the Open Meetings Act. Don't think you're going to be doing hospital medical staff work, and you're not going to be granting privileges, but interesting to know. And then if you have, if there are national, state, or regional organizations that either the agency or a member of the board is a member of, the fact that more than three of you attend a gathering of that organization does not make it a meeting for state Open Meetings Act purposes. So I don't know if there's, you know, a national association of energy authorities, but if there is one and you belong to it, more than three of you can go to that meeting at the same time, and it isn't subject to the Open Meetings Act. So the next thing is executive sessions. Executive sessions are not an exception to the Open Meetings Act. They are a modification to the conduct of an open meeting, which is already being in progress. One of the things the legislature told us actually in AS 44-62-310 is that as a matter of policy, executive sessions should be used infrequently. There are some very specific things that you're allowed to do in executive session, and in order to establish that those things exist, there has to be a motion to go into executive session, which describes in a certain amount of detail what the nature of the executive session will be. It has to be done in a way, obviously, that does not compromise the reason that you're having the executive session in the first place. So you don't want to disclose confidential information in order to decide whether or not you want to have an executive session to protect it. But you do need to be somewhat specific about what you're going to be discussing so that it's clear that what you're going to have an executive session about qualifies under the statute. And then the board must affirmatively vote to go into executive session to discuss the matters which meet the criteria for the executive session. And then no action can be taken in executive session. With two exceptions, you can provide direction to an attorney in a specific legal matter, and I didn't put it on the slide because it's unlikely to apply to you or to many agencies, but you can give direction to a labor negotiator in negotiations with a labor union or other kind of employee organization. One thing that's not explicitly on here is that the discussion in executive session has to be limited very directly to the purpose for the executive session. So there may be broader issues surrounding the confidential material that you're discussing, but those need to be discussed still in public. And, of course, as I say, any action that needs to be taken on that subject needs to be taken in open session after the executive session is over. So you have the Open Meetings Act provides for some specific subjects which are appropriate for executive session. I will add that under the consideration of government records that are by law are not subject to public disclosure, I need to go back. No,
not sure why I did that. So considering records that are not subject to public disclosure, that normally is going to be governed by things like the Public Records Act and the Personnel Act and Trade Secrets Act and things like that. You do have for ADA, AS 4488215A, which provide that certain specified kinds of documents are submitted to ADA by an applicant or borrower are going to be confidential if the applicant or borrower requests confidentiality. So if you're talking about those kinds of documents, you would be able to do that in executive session because those documents are by law not subject to public disclosure. So there are some non-statutory reasons that you can have an executive session. These are things that the courts have considered to be acceptable, even though they're not explicitly listed. The most common one is to protect the attorney-client communications privilege, because it's not possible for a board to get legal advice that's confidential without having it in executive session. And if you do it, if you get legal advice in open session, then you've lost the privilege. The courts have considered that it's acceptable to have an executive session to get general legal advice. That's something that does need to be balanced against the purposes there, especially when you're getting advice from state lawyers on interpretation of state law and that sort of thing. But it is possible to have an executive session for general legal advice. There are also some other common law privileges, deliberative process and executive privilege, which are very unlikely to apply to AEA or ADA, but they do exist. And if you have a situation that arises that might fit within one of those, then that's an opportunity to consult with your assigned attorney to talk about. So I guess I ought to... We've been sort of zipping through here because I'm trying to respect the 30-minute limit, but I do want to stop for just a moment before we move on to consequences and make sure that there aren't any questions that you may have on the material that we've covered so far. We've gone through pretty quickly. It's a lot of material. So I'm going to make sure before we move on to this next section that we've got any questions covered. And I'm not hearing
Mr.
any.
Harry, we're getting a lot of feedback. Is there a... Thank you.
Okay, so the most important thing is that if an act is taken, a decision is made that violates the Open Meetings Act, either because there wasn't proper notice or because the decision was made in executive session any number of other kinds of violations, the materials weren't made available to the public or whatever, it's possible for the action to be voided by a court. The legislature recognizes that voiding agency actions can be very disruptive to government operations, and so the statute specifically provides that an agency that violates the Open Meetings Act can cure that violation. And that can occur either before or after the action is voided by a court. So, obviously, it's better if you do it before it's voided. It saves everybody the time and expense of litigation. But the way that you cure a violation is by issuing a public notice properly and then reconsidering the action that was taken and basically redoing the decision using the proper Open Meetings Act procedures. It's and this is, by the way, found in AS 4462.310F. If you want to look at a little bit more detail of what the rules are, I would caution against relying too heavily on the ability to cure as a way of dealing with Open Meetings Act issues. The primary reason is that
there are obviously things that can't be cured because because they're already done and there's no way to effectively reconsider them. They may have unintended or incomplete kinds of consequences if your board composition has changed, for example, significantly. It may be really difficult to actually make the same decision over again. Or circumstances may have changed so that even though the original decision was appropriate, it may no longer be appropriate under the circumstances that you're in right at that moment. That's, you don't want to violate the Open Meetings Act just because it's the right thing to do, but you also don't want to violate the Open Meetings Act because although you may be able to cure, the cure may not be a complete remedy and it may cause some unintended consequences. So, the conclusion to all of this is that you are, as government entities, expected to operate in public whenever possible, and you should ask for advice preferably before you act so that you don't have to have the question of what consequences might attach to a violation. And I think there really is one question that's still open, and that is the exact way that this would apply to corporations which are owned by public entities. So, in other words, if you, I think the question was if there was a C corporation that was owned by the state. Is that, am I recalling that correctly?
Yeah. And we do have one question here.
Thank you, Stuart, for putting this training on for us. This is Board Member Albert. I noticed it said that the executive sessions have to be used infrequently, but I would say on a daily basis here, we're dealing with a lot of confidential information, whether it's with reviewing projects that may come to fruition, or we have a huge loan portfolio that we've been reviewing because of the pandemic, and we want to keep that information sensitive. So in our real world here, we actually have to use executive session quite frequently because of all the confidential information that we're reviewing on a daily basis here, certainly at every board meeting. How do we reconcile that with the Open Meetings Act?
Well, I'm sensitive to the fact that you do have a unique role, I think, in doing the sorts of things that you do. The tension between confidentiality and openness is not entirely unique to ADA. There certainly are other state agencies that have a lot of confidential material to deal with. One of the things to really seriously think about is the extent to which the board needs to look at the specific details of that are actually confidential related to your work compared to the decisions that actually have to be made at the board level that might not require explicit consideration of the confidential materials. But that's a way of doing, of trying to minimize the amount of executive session work that you do. If that's not possible, then certainly if it's justified under the Open Meetings Act as an executive session subject, then I don't think there's any reason that you should hesitate to use an executive session. But what you want to do is think pretty carefully and honestly somewhat creatively about that tension and make sure that you're satisfied that there isn't another way to do it that might result in more openness. I think that's probably the takeaway as far as training is concerned as opposed to advice, which I'm not here to give, is that if you can think of a way to be open, then the statute very much encourages you to do it that way. If you've exhausted all the possibilities of doing
your work in the open, and the only alternative left is executive session, then by all means, do an executive session. Make sure you follow the rules about, you know, stating the purpose on the record, having an actual vote on the on it, and then make sure that you are careful to limit the discussion in executive session to just the subject matter that needs to be confidential, and make no decisions in that context. But as long as you turn square corners and do all the things that you're supposed to do, the fact that you your work requires you to be confidential, simply you have to respect that, and you have to do it. So there's a tension there, and you're, you know, on a day-to-day basis, it's something that needs to be resolved and consciously, as opposed to just sort of assuming that, okay, the only way to do it is the way we've always done it, and there may not be any other alternatives to doing it essentially completely behind closed doors. Does that help?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. I know that we have consulted with our attorneys here, and I feel pretty comfortable with the with reviewing the information and taking the time to make the decisions and get the information. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
And I have to apologize. I actually thought that I was getting no feedback, and it turns out that at some point during my presentation, my sound system decided that I no longer needed to be able to hear you. So I suspect that I talked over some questions, or I may have missed some things earlier, and I apologize for that. If I certainly hope that anything that you've got said, you'll be willing to repeat so that I can answer the questions at this point.
Mr. Gehring, this is Alan Weissner. There were no questions as you were presenting the information. We really followed up with Board Member Fogel's question. I do ask the board, are there any other questions that are for Mr. Gehring? Then we really appreciate your participation in running through this information with us. Thank you very much.
Okay, so the one thing that I think I didn't cover, though, is the question of the C Corporation. And the answer there is, I think what you need to do is look at whether or not a corporation which is owned by the state, but which is not necessarily a public corporation of the state, meets the definition of a governmental body within the meaning of the statute. And I think that's probably, in most cases, that's going to be if that corporation is merely owned by the state but has independent management and independent corporate governance, unless the governing documents of that organization specify that it will be subject to the Open Meetings Act, typically it would operate the same way any other independent business would operate. But you're going to have to look at the actual structure of the business and the definitions in the Open Meetings Act to be absolutely sure about that. But I can say from having advised other agencies that do, in fact, own either in whole or in part enterprises, the enterprises are not automatically subject to the Open Meetings Act simply because they have partial or full state corporate state ownership from a state public corporation or a state agency. So that's a subject I think that you should probably take up with your counsel, but the general answer would be no, those entities, but then the people that are on those boards and that are managing those businesses are also not state employees and are not doing state business, they're doing whatever that company's business is at that point. So anyway, that was circling around to the question that was asked earlier that I don't think got covered in detail in the presentation.
Mr. Gehring, thank you very much.
Okay.
Good information.
All right.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, that concludes the training session. Brings us to item number B under new business, resolution G21-06, appointment officer, and it says resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority relating to the appointment of Morgan Neff as an officer of the authority. Alan?
Mr. Chairman, before the board is resolution number G2106, resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority relating to the appointment of Morgan D. Neff as an officer of the authority. And I request, Mr. Chairman, if Morgan is able to join us here.
Maybe.
So, Mr. Chairman, board, I'm very happy to have this before you, where we are requesting the appointment of Morgan as ADA's Chief Investment Officer, as well as Assistant Secretary Treasurer of the organization. Morgan started with us February 1st. He has been becoming actively and increasingly involved in underlying asset management of our portfolio and also involves in a fair detail of analysis of our existing programs and infrastructure investment and development, as well as some investment programs. He's rapidly coming on board and very much appreciate the fact that he's joined ADA and the organization. Again, look forward to your discussion with him, and we are seeking his formal appointment with the organization.
Thank you. Questions from the board? Bernie?
Yeah, Morgan, what's your shelf life? Do you plan on being around a while, or are you just, what is your shelf life? I want to just get it out there.
I appreciate the question, Mr. Chairman, board. My shelf life is as long as you'll have me.
Wow, that's a hell of a good answer. that was the right answer, really.
I lived in Fort Worth for 41 years. This is the first time I've ever made the move out of state, and it was only going to be to Alaska. So.
Perfect answer. Thank you. Welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
Anna or Julie online, do you guys have any questions for Morgan?
No, just say welcome aboard, Morgan.
Mr. Chairman, for those members of the public that may not have attended our last meeting, could we have Morgan speak to his qualifications?
Absolutely, Morgan.
Thank you. I've been in the investment business really on the private side for the last 20 years. I started when I was 22 or 23, and my entire investment career has been credit, debt, and loan-based. This includes from the highest end of the spectrum all the way down to the lowest end of the spectrum from a credit quality standpoint, which includes project finance, direct lending, and also distressed and restructuring opportunities in order to enhance value not only for the company, but also for the capital that I have deployed. For 15 years, I worked as a partner at a firm in Fort Worth where we were ranked as the number one fixed income manager and credit manager in the entire universe against our comparable peer class. And then I transitioned to a single family office that was a multi-billion dollar operation to set up their operations that also was attached to a lot of direct lending, project finance, with a significant understanding of the oil and gas sector. And then just for a little bit of background, Alaska's always held a special place in my heart because my grandfather and my grandmother actually met here, and they actually got married up here. And I've actually had the opportunity to go through the archives of the University of Anchorage's newspaper and found out recently that my grandmother was Miss University when she was here, so that was pretty cool. My dad, I'm 41, my dad came up here to work when he was 41 as well, so it's been a round trip. And one of the main reasons my interest in coming and living in Alaska was because it's always treated my family well. My dad was just emphatically passionate about the community, the citizens, and what he was able to take from Alaska, not just give. And we had all planned to come up here as a family, but unfortunately those plans were derailed, and I picked them back up on February 1st.
Thank you, Morgan. Further questions from board members? All right. Well, I'll entertain a motion for G21-06.
I move. This is Bill. I move resolution number G21-06.
Board Member Sandy, I second.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the motion? Resolution? So would you pull the board, please?
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Kendrick?
Yes.
Mr. Fogle?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Board, we very much appreciate the addition of Morgan to our group. He's going to be additive to the current group that we have, the organization, and I look forward to what he does in the future with us. Thank you.
Okay, so next up on our agenda is executive session. So what I propose is we go into executive session. We'll take take a quick break before we actually start the discussion. So I would look for a motion for the executive session to discuss confidential matters related to the Skagway Ore Terminal, Blue Crest Energy, ADA Loan Participation Program Review, Ambler Access Project, Mustang Holdings, LLC, and ADA Personnel Update, I guess. I have a motion.
This is Board Member Bill Kendig. I move that the Board enter an executive session to discuss confidential matters related to Skagway Ore Terminal, Blue Crest Energy, ADA Loan Participation Program Review, Ambler Access Project, Mustang Holding LLC, and ADA Personal Update. This is supported by the Open Meetings Act, which allows the Board to consider confidential matters in executive session. In this case, the Board believes that these are subjects which would have an adverse effect upon the finances of ADA or are protected by law due to the rules protecting personal privacy and certain business information.
This is Board Member Albert. I'll second.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, we will go into executive session, and we will come back at 20 to 10. So that works for Julie and Anna online?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Beyond 1:38, I advise that the Board does not take any formal action on matters I'll discuss in the executive session. Brings us back to our agenda for today. Item number D, resolution number G21-05, Skagway Ore Terminal. Alan?
Mr. Chairman, before the Board is resolution number G21-05. Resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority approving ASRC Energy Services Inspection and Evaluation Budget for the Skagway Ore Terminal. I also ask the Chair if Morgan Neff can join the table for questions and discussions on this, as well as the Project Manager, Jesse Peterson.
All right. Welcome, Morgan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Chairman, what we are proposing, and there's attached is a Board memorandum that's been prepared for the Board reviewing the terminal or Skagway Ore Terminal evaluation. We are requesting to enter into a contract with ASRC Energy Services to provide professional engineering services at the Skagway Ore Terminal, which is within the municipality of Skagway, and they're to undertake the review of the facilities themselves, take an analysis of parts of the operations of the Skagway Ore Terminal are available to be utilized in another development if that needs to be the case. We have a lease, a sublease that's with the municipality of Skagway that expires on March 16, 2023. And in cases
us,
that...
Or is that White Pass? We have one with... We're a subleasee, aren't we?
We are a subleasee of an entity that's called the Skagway Terminal Corporation, which is a subsidiary of Parn, which is ultimately owned by White Pass.
Okay.
And through that, it's a lease of land that is owned by the municipality of Skagway. The tidelands of which the ore dock itself is positioned, that is through a direct lease that White Pass has through its entities with the municipality of Skagway, and ADA is not involved in that lease.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Maybe if you could just give a very brief description of why ADA is even involved in this port terminal in Skagway to begin with.
Certainly, and that's part of the information that is also provided in the memorandum, is that in 1990, ADA was invited to acquire the Skagway terminal from White Pass due to environmental reclamation issues that were raised by the Department of Environmental Conservation at that time. It was viewed that in ADA coming in, again, in 1990, where we issued bonds of about $25 million to purchase the facility, that we were the right entity to come in and do the reclamation, oversee it, and continue to manage the terminal the terminal entity and its operation on an ongoing basis to ensure that it was being managed and operated in an appropriate way for the state. So we engaged, we did the acquisition, we also then subsequently did upgrades to the terminal and its ore loading facility. We enclosed a portion of it that was being utilized. We created, we also enclosed the ore loader. We created a negative pressure. We're ensuring that the previous legacy contamination from the previous owner would not continue its ongoing operation.
So in your estimation, we helped this ore terminal and the state of Alaska, and we really had, this organization had no financial benefit.
At the time when we came in, there was no financial benefit in place. We have subsequently created additional leases, and I would highlight that that was one of the reasons why we were brought in, is to create a broader opportunity for utilization of the ore terminal. Its principal involvement now is with an entity called Pembridge Resources, which develops copper concentrate out of the Minto Mine. They acquired the Minto Mine from Capstone Mining 2 years ago. And they are continuing to use the ore terminal. There are possibly future uses for the ore terminal past the initial or the this closing lease date of March 16, 2023.
Thank you.
But Morgan, you want to talk about the?
What are our choices, Alan or Morgan? Give us the 10,000 foot level. We're gonna evaluate what we have, which is going to include you're proposing engaging ASRC Energy Services to do the evaluation, which will then help us make the decision to do how many things? What are our choices?
As it's put in the memo and as the investment has been made, we do not, as Alan put, own any of the land and just own everything north of the land, so all the real asset value. Therefore, we're reviewing that from a multifaceted, plan, which includes ASRC in evaluating what it would do from a, call it a scrap perspective, or what it would cost in order to modernize the facility under a new business plan and an agreement with the municipality.
And this is Alan Westner. Chairman, this is in follow-up to, based upon the recommendation from the board, to take an analysis of what our options were for the Skagway Ore Terminal, given the fact that the lease date is coming up. It is 2 years from now, but in anticipating a potential end to that lease, if there is not a future for that ore terminal in Skagway, what other alternatives there are for regional mining development and resources that are currently under development for use of an ore terminal. We also have discussions that are ongoing with the Yukon Territory to work with them and the mining development within the Yukon Territory and their need for a deep water mining port within on the road system and within a shorter distance reach than an alternative in Port Stewart.
What's the municipality of Skagway's position?
We have been engaging with the municipality of Skagway or have been trying to engage with the municipality of Skagway since latter part of 2018. We had initial discussions that were in the course of 2019 through roundtable meetings in Skagway that included the Yukon Territory, ourselves, other interests, industrial interests that are within the port. It's unclear to me what their particular interest is ongoing. We have been looking to speak with them about the future use of that ore terminal in Skagway. However, the latest communication that we have seen is that there may no longer be an interest for the ore terminal to be present there.
All right. The questions for Alan or and his team?
Mr. Chairman, I see that Jesse Peterson has joined us. What I would ask Jesse to please give some background on the why we have elected to use ASRC, how we've engaged them through what competitive process and the public engagement process we've been, you know, undertaken with them, and then ultimately if you could please describe in some detail for the board the work that they're going to be undertaking, please.
Sure, you bet, Alan. So we have received a proposal from ASRC. They supplied us with a proposal that was competitively bid and in compliance with our procurement regulations. We've negotiated a scope and a price for some work that we're looking to engage with them on. We're really trying to seek at a high level what our preliminary options are at the terminal. What investment level would be required if we were to modernize and enhance the Skagway terminal. So we're going to take a look at some different options. Also, we need to understand what our obligations are and what those costs associated with our infrastructure if in the event that we are unable to come to terms with a new lease or decide not to move forward with operating in Skagway anymore. So we're getting a very high level kind of rough order of magnitude cost analysis performed by SRC and their team to give us an idea of what the scope of this project would be if we were to undertake it.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we have some options here. I think it's a good idea to do this this report. I think that's good. You competitively bid it. How many people bid on it?
So this was bid underneath our engineering term contracts, and I believe that I think it was either 8 or 10 proposers on this.
So it was robust anyway.
It was robust, yes.
So you selected one. It looks like you've done a good job negotiating it out. I would agree with this. But then looking at our lease is up pretty soon with the municipality. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
And we have some pretty interesting decisions that we have to make.
Yes, absolutely.
And it would appear to me, you know, just looking at it from a straight business deal, we would just be better off to take the keys and hand them to the municipality and we walk away. That's what seemed best to me. And so, I'm going to probably be promoting that. You know, I don't see any reason. It sounds like they don't want us there, so I think we should be sensitive to the community's wishes. They want to move towards the tourism industry. I think we should let them move towards the tourist industry. And I don't think we should be someplace where they don't want us. And it looks to me like we have an opportunity to, correct me if I'm right or wrong, but I believe we've already written this off our books. Is that correct?
Through the chair, just one correction, Mr. Carl. We have fully depreciated the asset. We have not written it.
Oh, excuse me. Excuse me. We have fully depreciated it. So, it would seem to me that, what is the age of the facility?
It was constructed in 1968, so.
So it's not new is what you're telling me.
It's not new. 50 plus years old.
But through the chair, there have been upgrades that have been actually financed through lease arrangements with Capstone Mine as late as 2008.
Okay. Well, I think you've done a good job on getting this study ready, and we're going to vote on this resolution today. I'll be voting for it to pass, but I'll also in the back of my mind be thinking about how we're going to get rid of this asset, and it looks to me like we should consider giving the keys to them.
Through the chair, just one clarification, Mr. Carl, that the assets we have, we purchased from White Pass. The leases that we have are subleases that work through White Pass. So it really is the issue of whether, in determining from ASRC's assessment what the value would be ultimately for a sale or potential sale what the value would be in salvaging certain components that would be for a future development in some other area within the region on the road system that meets the needs of ADA for mine development and the Yukon Territory for mine development, or it would ultimately come down to handing over the assets to White Pass, in this case, who we purchased them from.
Okay, so does our lease, because it's an old lease, right? The lease is 40-plus years old with White Pass. I mean, how old is our agreement with White Pass? How old is the agreement?
1990.
Mr. Carl, the agreement, the underlying lease that we're engaged in is older than the purchase of the facilities. I believe it's a 55-year lease that was entered into that comes due in 2023.
Okay, so let's just say, for instance, this study comes back. Play devil's advocate for just a moment. The study comes back and says, we think that the only value you have here is in the loader itself, you know, for loading the ore out. And you might have a home for that. The building isn't worth messing with because you tear it down. It was built in X amount of years. Even with the upgrades, it's not worth moving. So you have something to sell, and you can put that out for sale. And then, do we have the right in our lease, in our master lease with White Pass, to give them what's left, give them the keys to the building?
That is one of the options that's within the purchase agreement. Again, that was arranged in 1990 on a very special context, bringing ADA in to do reclamation for, you know, pre-existing conditions at the terminal.
Well, I'm going to be voting for this resolution, G21-05, and it looks to me like once we get this finished, we'll probably have another talk, won't we?
Through the chair. Yes, sir, we will.
Go ahead, Anna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we restate for the record exactly how much money ADA has invested in this facility?
Through the chair, Ms. McKinnon, ADA originally purchased the facilities for $25 million in 1990 through its Series 1990A bond. We have, in aggregate, invested a little close to $32.9 million into the facility in undertaking our role and responsibility in managing it, you know, as a responsible operation in the Skagway community. We have had returns on that based upon usage of the terminal, but the returns themselves ultimately from usage has been sporadic over the time since we've been involved. It's been mostly consistent going from 2003 onward, but it has not fully recovered the 32.9 originally invested. We have just been able to, through effects of time and accounting standards, fully depreciated on our books the asset.
Thank you. So the total, I have it in my memo. I'm not sure all of the public has it at their hand. But to date, we have about $32.9 million invested from an ADA perspective. I know that we've depreciated the asset. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Thank you. And then my next question went to something you just touched on. Do you have any... as we look at the value that this asset contributes to ADA and the value to the community as an employer, I see that in the memo that is dated March 3rd, 2021, on the Skagway Ore Terminal Evaluation Resolution G2105, under ADA's mission, it talks about what is shipped through the terminal in 2020, and that was 20,000 tons were shipped through, according to the memo, through 2020. Is 20,000 the consistency that you're talking about after 2003, or were those numbers higher pre-COVID?
Through the chair, Ms. McKinnon, the 20,000 is representative of an existing agreement that we had previously with Capstone Mining for the Minto mine itself, and they are actually the direct party that is contracting for the storage capacity and use of the facilities. That was purchased in, I believe, 2019 by Pembridge Resources, and Pembridge Resources is the one who is utilizing that. So that reflects the current utilization of the ore terminal. It has a maximum annual capacity of 1.5 million tons. Wow. So it's underutilized currently. There is other mine developments that are occurring in the Yukon Territory. There is a development that's happening north of Haines by Constantine that is under development at this point that has asked for and received quotes on utilization of the Skagway ore terminal, assuming it was in future operation past 2023. There are other quotes that we've been receiving from Yukon Territory mines also of interest for utilizing the facilities. Again, it is the nearest deepwater port for the Yukon Territory. So there is interest in capacity or terminal capacity in the region, whether it's in Skagway or maybe located elsewhere, at least along with the road network. Thank you.
Thank you for that additional information. Mr. Chairman, I agree with Board Member Carl that given that we have a sublease that's getting ready to expire with the municipality of Skagway on March 16, 2023, that we should go forward and assess the value of the assets that we have on the location to see if they could be sold or reused or of value to others. And so as one board of director members, I certainly would prefer to sell the product, sell the asset to benefit Ada and Alaskans versus turning over the keys. But again, that evaluation will help us understand the choices that are before us. And so I would just state that I would be interested in looking at the sale and the need of some of the assets that we currently own in the region and whether there are communities that are supportive of allowing mining resources to make it to market. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Anna. Further comments? All right.
Mr. Chairman, the only other thing just to highlight is that there is the continued possibility that Skagway has an interest to continue with the operation there, which would require new investment, would require a new lease arrangement, and other structures. So we do hold that open. It's not at this point our understanding that things have been concluded with the municipality of Skagway, and that is one potential situation that could evolve.
All right. Keep our options open. All right. So I'll entertain a motion.
This is Bill. I move resolution number G2105 approving ASRC Energy Services Inspection and Evaluation Budget for Skagway Ore Terminal.
This is Albert. I'll second.
Any further discussion? Hearing, seeing none, Ms. Would you pull the board?
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Hendick?
Yes.
Mr. Fogle?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
It passes.
Thank you. Brings us to item E on our agenda for new business, resolution G21-07, Bluecrest Quest Energy, approving amendment to a loan agreement with Bluecrest Alaska Operating LLC and co-borrowers. Alan?
Mr. Chairman, we have the resolution number G21-07, resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority approving amendments to loan agreement with Bluecrest Alaska Operating LLC and co-borrowers. I do ask the chair if Morgan Neff can remain here at the table to address any questions that the board and members may have.
Yeah, he's more than welcome. Once he's here, you don't have to ask permission.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman.
He's here whether he wants to.
That's right. We'll let you know.
Thank you.
The borrower in this case, which we commonly refer to as Bluecrest Energy, Inc., received a loan modification last year, March 2020, extending his loan for their loan for an additional year and providing for interest-only payments through the end of March, up to April 1st, 2021. The borrower has come back to us and asked for an extension of this modification for interest-only payments through to the end of July. So the next payment of August 1st would then be principal and interest-only payments, or principal and interest payments going forward. The reason for the request is to they have been significantly impacted by the reduction in oil prices that happened from the COVID-19 economic impact. Oil prices recover. They recognize that oil prices have recovered. However, there is a transition stage between those lower prices and their ability to meet their operating costs and expenses that they have in advancing their plan of development. So they have asked for a time period, with again, through to August 1st, to allow them to continue at interest only during that time, and then ultimately come back into principal and interest payments.
Thank you, Elvin. Morgan?
Mr. Chairman, I would also say that any request for this interest-only extension would be accompanied by ADA's requirement for enhanced reporting on any and all documents that we deem that are necessary in order to monitor the situation and the collateral of the investment.
Okay. Questions?
Yes.
Go ahead, Bernie.
Has Blue Crest been paying their payments on time? Have they been a good client up to this point? In other words, are they paying their interest payments? Are they doing that on time?
Through the chair, Mr. Carl, since this loan was put in place, they have been timely performing under their loan. It never been a situation that I'm aware of that they have been in any case late on their payment.
Is the asset at this time working? We have the drill rig is the asset, right? Plus the camp. Do you know if it's physically working?
The drill rig is operational. Is it currently in operation? No, because they're ultimately producing from the existing wells. According to their plan of development, there is a future use that's there as they further explore the Cosmopolitan unit. But as of right now, it's not in operation for those activities.
Can you tell me, what did they pay for that drill rig? Do we know that?
That was initially paid amount of, well, at least we advanced $30 million under that, and I believe that it was a $40 million cost for the rig.
Do we know, say for instance, we extend this interest only until August 1st. Do we have a plan if they, what's going to happen after August 1st? Do you have a plan of what you're going to do after that?
Well, this is the time period that they have requested us to continue the extension. So that dovetails into a bit that Morgan had just highlighted, is that we're asking for additional information to understand how they're going to be progressing after that point in time.
Well, the simple fact that they've been paying their interest payment and doing that on time, it would seem to me that we should allow this to go on until August 1st and then relook at it. It seems like they've been up at least keeping that part of it current that they agreed to do. So I will be speaking in favor of G21-07, and I'll be looking to pass this out.
Any other comments, Albert?
Mr. Chairman, Alan, are we sending, or Morgan, are we sending a letter to Blue Crest outlining the parameters of the information that we're requesting and the consequences of their actions if they're not willing to be a good participant?
So going forward, if this is approved, that will be clearly stated as a term and requirement of the modification or the extension in this matter. So that will absolutely be conveyed, and it will be 100% conditional on them providing whatever information we deem necessary going forward.
Thank you. Out of the $30 million in loan that we gave to them, how much is still outstanding?
There's $13.2 million in principal balance that is currently outstanding, and that was the amount outstanding at the point in time we put the interest-only modification in place in March 2020.
Thank you. No further questions.
Anna?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Notice how I noticed you up there?
I appreciate that. I raised my hand. I've been raising it on the computer. Mr. Chairman, Alan, have royalties been being paid to the state of Alaska on this particular project?
Through the chair, yes, they have. Within our memorandum, we're defining the amount of royalties that they've paid. I'm just looking for that information. They have generated $12.6 million in royalty revenue for the state of Alaska since they initiated production.
Thank you. So that benefits the people of Alaska in the sense that 25% of that royalty goes to the permanent fund to be saved for Alaskans. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Ms. McKinnon, that's accurate. There's additionally the benefit of the employment that they created within the Kenai. Again, they have a man camp as part of our asset base, which is included in our collateral. That's a 50-man man camp. But they do have and have reported previously over 100 employees.
Thank you, Executive Director Weitzner. Could you tell me what the original structure is and anything that you that we can share publicly about that initial structure? What were the terms?
Through the chair, Ms. McKinnon, we do get a bit into that information in the board memo, but what I would summarize is the following, is that when this loan was first put in place in 2015, the capital structure for Blue Crest had in place and envisioned that there would be receipt of a little over $150 million in oil tax credits from the state of Alaska. That did not occur. They did not receive the full payments. I believe that we highlight the amount that they received in the memorandum. Quickly looking for the reference. I'm sorry, I need to revise my number. It's $125 million was what was expected in cash rebates from the state, and they received only $27 million in those payments. So that did alter their capital structure. That meant that they required some additional equity that would come in from other parties through their company for the full plan of development. What we do highlight within the memorandum and do want to highlight for the board is that Blue Crest has been advancing that plan of development in its filings with DNR and its development of the Cosmopolitan field. They have developed 5 wells. They've incorporated a new technique, the fishbone technique, which has augmented some of their production. So they have been actively investing within their field and producing oil and gas, paying the royalties. They have been adapting as best they can to the change in the capital structure. ADA's loan with Blue Crest Energy has been impacted by that. ADA and its staff has been working with Blue Crest Energy on ways that we can understand their financial structure better, provide them in these cases the modifications that they need to meet their current operating expenses and at least meet interest-only payments on our loan, and to continue to utilize the rig, which we believe is in the benefit of the state of Alaska for the production of oil and gas.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that additional information. I am supportive of receiving or staff to receive confidential information regarding this borrower so that we can determine their cash positions in a better way. Is that part of the process as we move forward so that we have a clear understanding of what they're asking for and what we place at risk in extending their terms?
Yes, ma'am. That is absolutely correct, and we will be approaching Blue Crest with those requests upon execution and acceptance of this extension.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all of my questions.
Thank you. Any further questions? I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I'd like to motion for approval resolution number G21-07. Resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority approving amendments to loan agreement with Blue Crest Alaska Operating LLC and co-borrowers.
This is Bill. I second.
Thank you. Discussion? Hearing and seeing none, would you please poll the board, Commissioner?
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Anna?
Sorry, my microphone was muted. Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Kendick?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Mr. Pruse?
Yes.
It passes.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to tell everybody, I noticed it's, I'm going to state that it's 2:10. We got items 7A through 7G. I would ask for the board's indulgence to read that individually, unless there's a particular question that we need to ask. In the spirit of speedy, we have another board meeting to go through. I would like to get support to go to item number 8.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
I just have one question for the executive director. Thanks for sending me the report of the building assessment that we conducted, I don't know, 6+ months ago. I inquired about, it looks like all the capital expenditures that are needed for this year can fall under the $250,000 threshold. So I see in here that there was maybe shuffling some money around to be made available for more building expenditures. So I'm just wondering if you could give a detailed report to the board about how you're going to actually utilize those additional funds that were unspent in previous years. Because if we have extra money, I'd like to deploy that as capital, especially in these hard times in Alaska, as opposed to, you know, buildings expenditures that we can do annually with our $250,000 budget.
Through the chair, Mr. Fogel, what the building assessment was I think, a key work product for us to look at as far as what over the next few years is being forecasted as being needed for the building. We currently have, based upon the report here that's under and provided also for the public under 7E, is several resolutions that aggregate, I believe, a little bit over $400,000 that is currently being held and encumbered under previous resolutions and unspent. So the plan going forward would be looking at the building assessment and the future years, seeing what we can bring forward to now to make a proposal to fully utilize those funds.
Yes. However, I'd like to see what that $400,000 is going to be used for. That would be on top of the $250,000 that you get every year for building improvements.
Through the chair, the way that $250 million has been used is, in some cases, not fully utilized if it's not required during the year. And it's also a reserve, an emergency reserve. So I would ask you, look at it in that context of if there are things in the building assessment that we can bring forward that we know are larger capital items that we wouldn't look to allocate it under that $250,000, that we would preserve the $250,000 under Resolution G-1721, I believe, that's available on an annual basis for what could possibly be emergency items that come through.
Mr. Fogel, I'd like to clarify one thing for the minutes, just so that we have proper documentation. When the executive director said $250 million, he meant $250,000. So thank you.
Yeah, I just want to be, this is the people's money. So if we're able to deploy some more money in loans or help the tourism industry or other industries suffering from the pandemic still, I think that'd be a good thing. And maybe we don't use all 400,000 of it. Maybe we only use half or we put half back for working capital. But I just want to see exactly what that money is going to be used for. And if it's for future years, that's great. Let's appropriate it for then. But I still haven't seen a plan of how to actually utilize all that money.
Through the chair, that is what we do need to present. And we would need to present that anyway if we were looking to utilize those funds.
Yes.
So it would need to be through a resolution that the board would approve in reallocating previous resolution capital to that current plan.
Yeah. because I looked through the building assessment and everything that I saw were pretty much up to date on a lot of things because we've done a lot of updating. There are some bigger ticket items out in the future, but we certainly can budget for that. We don't necessarily need to take existing money today to move it to then, but we can budget for it throughout the next 10 years. I think there's just a better prudent way of it just sitting there and not doing anything for the past 6 months, where we could utilize it now to do something. Because what are we making on that money? Nothing?
Currently with the, again, that's one of the elements that's available is our external managed funds. This would be part of internal managed funds, I believe, and that's at 1.8%.
Yeah. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other items under director's comments from AP&G? Any objection to going to item number 8? Nope. All right. Board comments. Ms. Sandy?
Nothing from me.
Mr. Carl?
Well, I'd like to thank the director here for his executive director for his work, and I'm thankful that we have new talent on board who plans on being around. And I like your ties to Alaska with your grandparents and so forth and so on, and your dad. Nice answers. We expect miracles, so just miracles. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bill? Albert?
I just want to say thank you to Alan and to Morgan. One of the things that I know the Budget and Audit Subcommittee has always been asking for is looking at our loan portfolio as well as our true cost of capital. And so to finally get our hands around those, I very much appreciate it. So thank you to both and to your leadership, Alan.
Thank you.
Anna? Nothing? All right. Well, I'd like to thank Alan and team. Appreciate it. Went through a lot today. Covered a lot. Very informational, I guess. I'll call it that word on where we're at. Again, the price of oil and the pandemic is front and center. As with all Alaska businesses, there's no difference with ADA. So we've got to roll up our sleeves, work ahead. Look forward to working with board members on more challenges that will probably be coming down the pike as we hopefully exit this pandemic era. And with that, I will take a motion for adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Bill. Any objection? We are adjourned. We will start back up at 2:30, 10 minutes.